Donald Trump signs a flurry of executive orders upon returning to the White House.
The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation.
What might America's withdrawal from international organizations mean for China?
The net effect of many of these orders is to just further make China more central in the relationship with many global South countries, particularly also in Africa.
And again, Trump says the U.S. needs to have control of Greenland.
Greenland is necessary, not for us. It's necessary for international security.
Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition.
I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. President Donald Trump got right to work upon his return to the White House Monday night.
He announced numerous executive actions on top-line issues like immigration and energy development, and in his inaugural address, promising to expand U.S. territory all the way, he said, to Mars. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
On this historic first day of his second term in office, President Donald Trump laid out his vision for a bolder and larger United States.
The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation, one that increases our wealth, expands our territory, builds our cities, raises our expectations, and carries our flag into new and beautiful horizons. And we will pursue our manifest destiny into the stars, launching American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars.
Then he got to work, signing a stack of executive orders. He said they include a declaration of a national emergency at the southern border that would allow the deployment of troops, and a national energy emergency that will allow more domestic extraction. He also declared that there are only two genders, and said he would order that the Gulf of Mexico be renamed the Gulf of America. Historians say that Trump made history by using what is historically a unifying speech to portray a future that many Americans may disagree with. University of Texas history professor Jeremy Suri spoke to VOA from Austin via Zoom.
It was less an inaugural speech and more a State of the Union. He just listed a series of bullet points of projects he wanted to undertake, from deporting immigrants to seizing back the Panama Canal.
Thousands of Trump supporters came to Washington from across the country because they say his policies speak to them. Melanie Vole is a resident of Cleveland.
Common sense, the bringing back of common sense out loud. So many people have in my position feel like we are the silent majority. And I think this is going to give us the opportunity to speak out loud and to be, you know, and unafraid to speak the truth and to speak common sense.
Shortly after his inaugural, Trump spoke to a smaller group of supporters in the Capitol and reiterated claims that the 2020 election was totally rigged, a claim without proof. He also alluded to his plans to pardon some of those convicted over the violent events of January 6, 2021, when a mob of Trump supporters attempted to disrupt the certification of the election won by Joe Biden.
And I think this was a better speech than the one I made upstairs, okay? I think this was better, J.D., I think this was much better.
Some of Trump's powerful supporters expressed their joy.
This is what victory feels like. Yeah!
CEO Elon Musk was among the billionaires in the Capitol Rotunda for the ceremony. Consumer advocacy groups are sounding alarms about some of the new president's quieter moves that seek to loosen regulations and, they say, benefit these elite few. Lisa Gilbert is co-president of the nonprofit consumer advocacy organization, Public Citizen.
When we think about why the incoming Trump administration wants to freeze regulations and halt public protections wholesale, it is at the behest of the wealthiest among us, corporate special interests. You know, they are who benefits when we don't have guardrails on the books.
Historians and analysts say it's not clear how many of Trump's day one actions, which his officials say number more than 100, will fly when challenged legally. For that answer, they say, look to tomorrow. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Trump's list of executive orders include pulling the U.S. out of international bodies, including the Paris Climate Accords and the World Health Organization. However, not participating in international dialogues could mean the U.S. will be left out of international solutions. Analysts say that's particularly true in Africa, where the absence of the U.S. can boost Chinese influence. VOA's Kate Bartlett has the story.
It's a U.S. exit, again, with the stroke of a pen.
The next item here is the withdrawal from the Paris Climate Treaty.
Just hours after being sworn into office Monday, President Trump had initiated Washington's withdrawal from the WHO and Paris Climate Deal. It may be some time before the broader impact of those moves will be clear, but Corbis van Staden, a China-Africa expert with the South African Institute of International Affairs, says one unintended consequence could be a shift in the global balance of power in these international institutions.
The U.S. withdrawal from the World Health Organization, from the Paris Accord, weakens the voice that the U.S. had in those organizations. The net effect of many of these orders is to just further make China more central in the relationship with many global South countries, particularly also in Africa.
While China may be the world's largest greenhouse gas emitter, it's also the biggest manufacturer of green technology products globally, notes Christian Gerald Niemer from the think tank called China Global South Project.
When the U.S. withdrew from the Paris Accord, China can rightfully put forward its narrative of being the green technology champion.
During a news conference on Tuesday, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Guo Zhaokun voiced concern about Trump's decision on the Paris Climate Agreement.
Climate change is a common challenge facing mankind. No country can stay out of it. No country can be immune to it. Chinese determination and actions to actively respond to climate change will be consistent.
This is what Jean Kaseya, African CDC Director General, told Newsroom Africa on Tuesday when asked about the potential impact of Trump pulling out of the WHO.
My interest is the health of African people. And the U.S. is the main partner that we have in Africa. And the U.S. is providing a large spectrum of services to African people. And I think it's time for us to understand the decision that is made and to see how we can overcome this challenge for African people.
At the same time, Kaseya says he sees opportunities with the new administration to create, as he puts it, a win-win for us all. Nima of the China Global South Project said the U.S. withdrawal from the World Health Organization, which will take a year, could help position China as a leader in global health.
When it comes to health cooperation, we can also see how much China is expanding its own influence in Africa with different medical cooperation it has with different countries.
China has a long record of building hospitals in Africa and sending medical aid ships and doctors to the continent. But Washington's withdrawal could see even more demand for funding and support from Beijing. Trump has accused the WHO of mishandling the COVID-19 pandemic. He also said he resents the fact that the U.S., the WHO's largest contributor, gives much more money to the organization than China contributes.
Pretty sad, though. Think of it. China pays $39 million and we pay $500 million. And China's a bigger country.
In further remarks on Tuesday, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman said China would continue to support the WHO in fulfilling its responsibilities, deepen international public health cooperation, and strengthen global health governance. Bob Wekesa, director at the African Center for the Study of the United States at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, said ultimately Trump's orders meant Africa would have to turn elsewhere for help.
African countries will now eventually have to figure out how to raise their own internal resources for matters to do with their health, and if not, kind of rely on Europeans and the Chinese and Indians.
Last month, the U.S. announced more than $1 billion in humanitarian assistance to African countries. But Wekesa said, with the U.S. pulling out of the WHO, relying less on the U.S. is a lesson that African countries already learned during Trump's first term in office. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Staying with African reaction to Trump's executive actions, conservatives across the continent are applauding Trump's executive orders regarding gender and diversity, while gay rights activists and the LGBTQ community are expressing deep concern. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
On his first day as the 47th U.S. president, Donald Trump signed a flurry of executive orders, including some that reversed policies by his predecessor, Joe Biden. These include orders revoking some protections for transgender people and defining the sexes strictly as male and female. Trump's actions have sparked a mix of reactions throughout Africa. Some, like Bishop John Praise Daniel, Vice President of the Pentecostal Fellowship of Nigeria, welcome Trump's moves.
I'm very excited. I think Donald Trump has just done what is right. So how can some young person wake up and say, I don't feel like being a girl, I want to be a boy, and their sexes will be changed? We don't need that confusion. Bringing back righteousness, bringing back order, bringing back sanity to society.
But while many in Africa's conservative societies are in support, LGBTQ activists strongly oppose the decision, calling it a setback after years of progress and advocacy. Frank Ejiogo, founder of Creme de la Creme, a Nigerian LGBTQ advocacy group, warns of serious consequences.
For me, I am not disappointed looking at his campaign promises and what have you. We know he's going to have a ripple effect, and that might catalyze a lot of violence against the LGBT community persons in the global south, which will boil down from discrimination, which will boil down to assault, which will boil down to a lot of policies that some government agencies or nations in the global south will start enacting.
Ejiogu says LGBTQ activists already are strategizing to resist such measures.
We are strategizing on how to stand firm in what we believe in and stand firm for the community. It can only be there for 4 years. But the only thing we've been promising ourselves, the LGBT community members all around the globe and also in the global south, is to making sure that we fight back to all those policies that's being enacted right now as against the LGBT community members all around the world.
Activists are concerned that Trump's moves will increase pressure on LGBTQ people in Africa and elsewhere. Members of the LGBTQ community already face harsh penalties in many African countries. In Nigeria, same-sex relationships are punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Uganda's Constitutional Court upheld a life sentence for homosexuality offenders last year, while Mali's Hunter criminalized homosexuality with imprisonment in December. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Dangerous winds have returned to Southern California as new wildfires broke out and a pair of major Los Angeles area blazes burn for a third week. Forecasters warn that gusts could peak at over 110 kilometers per hour along the coast and up to 160 kilometers per hour in the mountains and foothills. Meanwhile, fires have also erupted in San Diego County.
Israel's top general has resigned, citing the security and intelligence failures related to Hamas's surprise attack that triggered the war in Gaza. His departure, announced Tuesday, adds to the pressure on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who long delayed any public inquiry that could potentially implicate his leadership.
A fire tore through a 12-story hotel at a popular ski resort in northwestern Turkey. At least 76 people have died. Some were killed when they jumped from the building to escape the flames. The fire occurred near the start of a two-week winter break for schools when hotels in the area are crowded.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Donald Trump became the 47th president of the United States on Monday. America witnessed a unique inauguration address, unique because it was delivered inside for the first time in decades, and unique because of its content.
The newly sworn-in president called for a revolution of common sense as he outlined specific and controversial changes to government policy he was planning to enact. He called for the U.S. to retake the Panama Canal. He called for an end to DEI programs in the federal government. He lambasted the Biden administration for what he said was a weak immigration policy and an inadequate response to disasters.
Members of Congress from both parties were there to witness the historic moment and shared their thoughts with VOA's Katerina Lisanova.
For Rhode Island Democratic Representative Seth Magaziner, what stood out was the peaceful transfer of power.
First of all, it's always inspiring to see the peaceful transfer of power after a Democratic election. That has been the cornerstone of our country for nearly 250 years. And although I have serious policy disagreements with President Trump, it is still inspiring to see a Democratic election come to fruition once again.
Pennsylvania Republican Representative Brian Fitzpatrick lauded Trump's speech with hopes for unification behind the new president's message.
I liked his speech. I really did. I hope that he can stick to the theme of unity. To talk about the middle class, minority communities, a lot of people that spoke out this election that wanted a different path. And, you know, it's going to be on us to make sure that we legislate for those very same people.
Wisconsin Republican Representative Derek Van Orden thought the speech was electric and also had thoughts on the outgoing Biden administration.
I thought it was electric. America is back. America has been operating from a position of weakness over the last 4 years because of Joe Biden and his corrupt administration, and that's over.
And Democratic Representative Brad Schneider said there was something missing from Trump's speech.
We didn't hear what people care most about, which is the economy, the need to bring down the costs. He glanced over that. And what I was disappointed is there wasn't a message of unity, of bringing the country back together at a time where we hope to have great promise and opportunity ahead.
Regardless of political party, the new administration means new challenges for Congress as Trump attempts to bring America into what he calls its golden age.
Donald Trump has declared a national emergency at the southern border. For a look at what this means, I spoke with VOA's immigration reporter, Eleni Barros.
Well, he's outlining a range of measures aimed at basically addressing what he has described, and I put this in quotations, an invasion of illegal immigration. And he's talking also about drug trafficking and criminal activity at the border. So the justification to use that is basically to fight criminal gangs, cartels, human traffickers, smugglers.
Okay, so that's the justification for it. But what does it mean at the border? What's going to happen now that an emergency has been declared?
In a way, nothing's going to change right away. But President Trump is saying, here's what I want. So with this national emergency order at the border, he wants eventually the deployment of military forces. He wants construction of additional border barriers. So he has asked for the immediate building more physical barriers along the border. He wants the use of more technology and surveillance. And he also, which is interesting, he also added requirements. He wants the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Homeland Security to report back. So within 30 days, he has asked the Secretary of Defense to provide an initial report. And within 90 days, he has asked a joint report by DHS and DOD to let him know what else we need to get it done. The government needs to get it done in order to have the border protected.
How is American policy changing towards how migrants are processed, are treated, are taken care of, that sort of thing?
Well, initially, nothing changes. I mean, if you come to the United States, if a person comes to the United States and asylum law says that you have to be in U.S. territory and ask for help. It doesn't say you have to be at a port of entry in front of an officer. It doesn't say none of that. So even if you cross in between ports of entry and you ask for help, according to legislation, you have to be processed what the law says. And the law says that the United States has to hear your case. An immigration judge has to hear your case. So technically nothing happens. However, within the executive orders that he has announced yesterday, he has basically ended the use of CBP One app, which is an application that was used by the Biden administration to manage the migrant flows. So people would access, request an appointment, and on a certain day at a certain time, they would present themselves to a CBP officer, and the CBP officer was already expecting that migrant with all the information. There was an initial vetting going on there. Now that's gone. So in reality, people are now at the border and they're waiting and they might try to cross in between ports of entry. And according to legislation, they will either be put under an expedited removal procedure, which basically puts you through a super fast track to deportation, or they will hear your case. Nothing according to legislation changes, but we don't know if that's actually what's going to happen at the border.
The president's orders are for the southern border. What about places like airports, the northern border, seaports, other ways to get into the country than just crossing the border in the south?
So he says national emergency on the border, right? He is focusing on the southern border. But if you try to come into the United States through in between ports of entry, when I say between ports of entry, you can be in a boat, you can be trying to cross, you know, the U.S.-Canadian border. In between ports of entry really means that you did not present yourself to a border patrol or CBP officer. If you try to do that, the same legislation is supposed to take place. If you're asking for help, if you're asking for asylum, the process of the United States hearing you and your case and you going in front of a judge is supposed to happen as well. If that's going to happen, we don't know.
Eleni Barros covers immigration for The Voice of America. Eleni, I'm sure we'll be talking again as this appears to be a rapidly changing subject here in the United States. Eleni, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Trump repeated his assertion on Monday that the United States needs to take control of Greenland from Denmark in what he described as a move necessary for international security. Trump's plans have raised concerns among the island's tiny population as it tries to navigate a changing future. Henry Ridgewell reports from Greenland's capital, Nuuk.
Icebound and scoured by driving blizzards, Greenland is in the grip of the Arctic winter. Yet the eyes of the world are watching this remote island. The US president's son, Donald Trump Jr., recently flew into the capital, Nuuk, a charm offensive that lasted just a few hours. Speaking from the Oval Office hours after his inauguration, President Trump repeated his assertion that the US needs to take control of Greenland from Denmark.
My son and representatives went up there 2 weeks ago, and they like us, so we'll see what happens. But Greenland is necessary, not for us. It's necessary for international security.
Greenland is part of Denmark, but the island's population of 57,000 enjoys a high degree of autonomy. Greenland's government has a simple message for the world.
We are not a commodity and we are not for sale.
Trump has refused to rule out economic or military coercion to take control of Greenland. His comments alarmed European allies, but Greenland sees some common ground with Washington.
If you cut through the rhetoric, I hear two messages from the US. One is we need to look at the national security aspect, and we quite agree with the US message in that point. We've been trying to advocate for that as well for some years. And the other perspective is, and the other message I hear is, we want to engage more in the Greenlandic mineral sector. And that is really, you know, kicking in an open door.
Greenland is due to hold elections by April at the latest. The government wants a simultaneous referendum on full independence from Denmark. After centuries of Danish control, the political winds of change in Greenland are growing stronger, says local journalist Arnak Nielsen.
Now it's about a lot more than the complicated relationship between Denmark and Greenland. Suddenly, Trump Jr. is here, and it all explodes. A small number of people here are really happy that Trump Jr. came to Greenland. And a small number of people really resent him coming here.
Feelings amplified by social media. YouTube influencers have also come to Greenland, handing out American dollars and baseball caps.
Make Greenland great again.
Not all welcome the attention. Greenlanders appear divided on Trump's intervention.
I think we are in a terrible situation. Our politicians are handling this totally wrong. They've been seduced by something so much bigger than they are able to handle.
Right now, Greenland has the attention of the whole world. That is really good. And it's about time that Greenland gets some more attention.
That attention looks set to continue.
The eyes of the world are now on Greenland.
But as the debate intensifies over the future of the island, its people say only they should decide their own future. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, Nuuk, Greenland.
That'll wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.